Welcome back to another episode of the Damage Report. I'm John Adderall. Today is Wednesday, and so J.R. Jackson is here.
Hey, I'm right in the middle of the week of the comeback tour of John Adderall. I mean, he takes a week off. His show is nearly taken away and given to someone
half
else.
Half week off.
That's all
he
it
was
takes.
Working for the first half.
That's all it takes. I was on twice, so it was damn near taken from you.
Exactly. I didn't know if we'd be able to recover after last week, but we're going to try. And the way that we're going to be recovering is taking a tour through white supremacy in America. It's going to pop up in a couple of different stories, some just examples of it, but an appeal to young white supremacists to renounce their dark, dark ways coming from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which we'll get to a little bit later on. And along the way, we're going to be joined by a couple of awesome guests. We're going to be touching base with an expert on the protests in Hawaii against the construction of a telescope on a sacred mountain. And then later on, Jose Caballero, who is an awesome candidate who is primarying a Democrat here in California in a race for Congress, is going to be joining us and breaking down his platform, what he hopes to get done if he enters Congress. Just so much to get to. So, in fact, why don't we jump into it with the scandal of the past few days involving Joaquin Castro? Joaquin Castro tweeted something yesterday, and since then he's been attacked by a whole load of people implying that he is trying to get donors to Donald Trump targeted by angry people, perhaps by violent people. So first let's take a look at the tweet that he sent out. It said this: "Sad to see so many San Antonians as 2019 maximum donors to Donald Trump, the owner of Bill Miller Barbecue, that's where that's spelled out that way. Owner of the historic Pearl, realtor Phyllis Browning, etc. Their contributions are fueling a campaign of hate that labels Hispanic immigrants as invaders." And attached to that was an image that had already been available, but we can go to that very, very quickly. Yeah, so you can see some names, and they were maximum contributors already to Donald Trump, and he was disappointed to see that. So that created a firestorm. Someone attempting to get out in front of that firestorm was a friend of the show, Dave Leventhal, who tweeted, "As this tweet has caused a firestorm, three facts: names, donation amounts, and employers of these Trump donors aren't private. They're public records found at FEC.gov. Federal political contributions of $200 plus are public, and it's not common for sitting members of Congress to do this." So he acknowledged that what Joaquin Castro did was somewhat out of the ordinary, but perhaps was not an attempt to get dozens of people in the San Antonio area killed, which is what some people were pitching it as. What did you make of this?
Okay, this is frustrating because the fact that we have to address it is part of the problem in the first place, because this fake outrage that comes from many people who literally in the same week are trying to cover, hide, and find some way to delegitimize, I guess, the talking about how much Donald Trump is pushing this kind of narrative that led to the shooting in El Paso, first of all, right? And countless others that have been going on. People that he's inspired to carry out violence. When he calls them invaders, say they're rapists, they're criminals, they're murderers, they're MS-13, they're coming to get you. When you say all that and you can still say, "I don't see a connection," or then even says, "Hey, punch him in the face for me."
Yeah.
Or when someone says, "Shoot him," and you start laughing at it, all that happens, but you can't find the link that's right there in front of your face. Yet, you can find a link between Joaquin Castro posting the donations from entities that are supporting Donald Trump, and you can somehow link that to violence when no part of the tweet said, "Look at all these people donating to Donald Trump. Don't you just want to shoot them? Yeah. Look at all these people donating to Donald Trump. Hey, they're rapists, they're killers, they're murderers, they're coming for you." Mm-hmm. None of that was said.
It's an invasion of donors to Trump. Yeah, no, he didn't say anything like that. People have, including Ted Cruz, by the way, also of Texas, have specifically said that what he did was dox these people. Thing about that is that dox actually has a definition, and what he did not do that. But I will allow Joaquin Castro to make that point. Earlier today, he appeared on Joe Scarborough's show, and this is what he said.
"Some of these Republicans said that I doxed these people. Doxing is when you tell somebody's physical address or phone number. None of that was in this graphic that I shared, which was first put up and circulated by a local Indivisible group. My post was actually a lament. If you look at my language, I said that it's sad that these folks, many of whom are prominent business owners in San Antonio, a city that's about 65% Hispanic, their customers, the people that have made them wealthy, their employees, the people that have worked for them for years, many of those folks are Hispanic, and they're giving their money to a guy who's running ads talking about Hispanics invading this country."
Yeah, you didn't dox them because you still have no idea where you can find them if that was what you were trying to do. It's just not what it is. And as Dave Leventhal pointed out, all of this was already public. It's all on the internet. Anyone who's made a contribution above $200, you can see the person. You can get like their industry that they work in and when they made the donation and who they made it to. That includes, by the way, you watching this. You can go on Open Secrets right now and you can search that. Literally everyone, that information is all available. He just made it slightly more available. While they're trying to make the case that he's inspiring hatred or violence, literally in the text that he sent, he said it was sad that they were fueling a campaign of hate. He wasn't saying go get these people. He wasn't saying I hate these people. He's saying it is sad to see that in a community that is so diverse that they would be supporting a politician whose values do not line up in any way with the communities that live in that area. That's all he said.
The next thing that they're going to be upset about is when someone says, look at the list of Republican congressmen or senators, whoever, that voted for this bill that exploits so-and-so. There's many things where they vote for that exploit people, from gay rights to immigrants, from migrant rights to voting rights. So if you post something out and says, hey, these Republicans are voting against something that's good for the American people, they're gonna go, how dare you list my vote? Mm-hmm. You know they're gonna come after me now? You know why they're gonna come after you? Because you're afraid of the negative, your negative votes that are actually hurting Americans. Yeah. If your conscience tells you you're in the wrong, accept that and do something different.
Yeah. Can we talk about Don Jr. for just a second? Because Don Jr., he's the guy who's very consistently been against any sort of intimidation, political violence, anything like that. He doesn't like it. And so, look, of all the people that were attacking Joaquin Castro, he is perhaps the fakest in his outrage. So he, even though, remember, when Trump got into office, they didn't do the blind trust or anything. They didn't need to because Donald Trump was gonna handle the politics and Don and the other one were gonna do the business stuff, right? And yet for some reason he comes on Fox and Friends all the time to talk about politics. Anyway, he was on Fox. Here is what he had to say about Joaquin Castro's tweet.
That list sort of screams like the Dayton, Ohio shooters list, right? When a radical left-wing politician who's polling at about 0% does this for either attention or a call to action, it's pretty scary. Well, I mean, that was the same list. Thing this, that the Dayton, Ohio shooter
this
did.
This is a list.
And people should be out. Fed up of this nonsense.
So that pile of mediocrity and hair gel is that angry at this tweet saying that it's the same as putting together a literal kill list. That Joaquin Castro, perhaps one of the mildest politicians I've ever seen in my life, was hoping that residents of this area would be murdered. That's why he did it. It's just absurd. But we understand all this fake outrage is designed to do one thing. For distract from the El Paso shooting, that's true. But there's one thing as well. They don't want any transparency in donations. They don't want any limitation on donations. They want money to just flood in, anonymous money to flood into our system. They don't want there to be any accountability. They want millionaires and billionaires to be able to buy our politics, which they already can, but with no possible, like you even knowing that it's happening, let alone being able to perhaps put some pressure on them to not do that anymore.
He also missed which politician he's talking about. He's talking about someone who's polling at 0% for presidency.
He definitely thought that this was Julian Castro.
Absolutely.
So he said no someone who's polling at
0%. Oh, you know, Joaquin is not running for president.
Yeah, Julian's also not polling at
0%. And also, we want to talk about kill lists. Ask the next question that Fox and Friends want to ask him is, so what about Cesar Sayoc, who had a kill list, who sent bombs, package bombs to that political kill list? Do you care about that? Because that's an actual political kill list where he quoted your dumb dad.
Yeah, I'm gonna end with just a very short quote because obviously any right wingers watching this are not gonna be convinced by what I say or probably what JR says. Maybe JR, but definitely not me. Dave Leventhal shared the perspective in this area of someone that they do respect. That's Antonin Scalia, who back in Doe versus Reed wrote, requiring people to stand up in public for their political acts fosters civic courage, without which democracy is doomed. For my part, I do not look forward to a society which, thanks to the Supreme Court, campaigns anonymously and even exercises the direct democracy of initiative and referendum hidden from public scrutiny and protected from the accountability of criticism. This does not resemble the home of the brave. So don't take it from me, take it from your favorite Supreme Court justice in history, Antonin Scalia. Okay, with that, we do have to take a break. We come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFDR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFDR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFDR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
For weeks now, Hawaii has been the site of protests over the construction of a telescope on a sacred mountain. The conflict actually goes back quite a ways. And joining us now to break down what exactly the protests are about, what the stakes are, and where this might go in the future is Professor of Political Science at the University of Hawaii, Noilani Goodyear Kapua. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Aloha, John. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. There's a few different aspects of this I'd like to talk about. But for people who might not have seen this, and honestly, I have not seen much mainstream news coverage of these protests. What is actually going on? What are the protests are about?
Well, we're getting to about a month now where folks have been camped out at the base of Mauna Kea Access Road. So the beginning of it was the establishment of a pu'u honua, which in Hawaiian culture is a place of refuge, it's a sanctuary, it's a safe place. So that was established on July 14th. And then on July 15th, when the construction was scheduled to begin, there were hundreds of people who gathered to block the road from machines that would be moving up the mountain. And since then, there has been a front line primarily held down by elders and respected community leaders, knowledge keepers of our peoples who have continued to hold that base of the Mauna Kea Access Road.
So as you point out, the announcement that the construction was going to begin happened last month, but there has been concerns about this construction taking place for years now, correct?
For years, yeah, the 30-meter telescope and the resistance against it has been going on for about 10 years now. And prior to that, there were also efforts that successfully stopped about a dozen telescopes from being built on Mauna Kea. There are 13 that currently are on the mountain, but this is of another scale. This would be an 18-story building about the size of a football field. It would be the largest building on the island. And so people are opposed to it because it's a sacred place. It's also conservation land. And it's land that was illegally seized from the Hawaiian kingdom without the consent of the people or our government. And since then, for over 100 years now, Hawaiians have been continuously asserting our claims to these lands.
And so I've read that the concern is that, look, this would be a gigantic building, obviously. I believe I read that it would be the largest telescope in the Northern Hemisphere, but also that there would be a lot more traffic in the area. And previously, buildings had been built that had not been specifically allowed. And so if this were to be built, the concern is also that there could be additional buildings, roads, traffic, and those sorts of things. It could become an even bigger issue in the future, right?
Right. So within state law, this is a conservation district, and the final environmental impact statement for the 30-meter telescope acknowledged that the cumulative impact of all of the telescopes that are currently residing on Mauna Kea has caused substantial environmental cultural harm. And what it says is that adding one more would be incremental harm on top of that. So it rationalizes further destruction of the mountain by the fact that there has been already destruction that's gone on. So what the dissenting opinion in the Hawaii Supreme Court case on the permit for the telescope, what that opinion stated, Justice Michael Wilson, was that this degradation principle is totally unacceptable, that we shouldn't rationalize further destruction of our environment because there has already been destruction of it.
And that's certainly been a concern throughout the islands. This island in particular, though, in Hawaiian culture has a significant place, right?
Well, the mountain itself, this is the tallest mountain on the island. From the base of the ocean floor to the top of the mountain, it's actually the tallest mountain on Earth, if you measure it all the way from the bottom of the ocean. For us as Kanaka, the mountain, Mauna Awa Kea, is another way of saying that shortened version, Mauna Kea, is an ancestor. It is a home of many deities, deities who are embodied in water forms like Poliahu, Lilinoe. They take bodily forms that remind us why this is a sacred and important place, because it is the top of a watershed.
And so when trying to perhaps predict where this might go, if the protests will be successful, the thing that confuses me is that this is not the only location where this telescope could be constructed. And in fact, there are contingency plans to build it in Spain. Why is it that, considering the huge amount of protests, that plan is not being acted on?
Well, we know that the TMT has now applied for the permits to build in the Canary Islands. And the other thing we know about why this has not been moved already after a month of protests and 34 elders being arrested is there are tons of interest here that would like to see that foreign money, you know, infused into the islands. It's part of a longer history of a particular economic model where foreign investment is prioritized over indigenous connections to land and the building of a more locally controlled economy. So it's not surprising to me that the powers that be would like this telescope to be sited here. But we have said over and over that, you know, there is no consent that's been given by the indigenous peoples of this place. And so we think that they should continue to pursue the possibility of moving it to the Canary Islands.
It's not very surprising to find out that economic concerns are driving this against the will of the people, but it is tragic. And we just want to thank you so much for joining us and breaking down the nature of the protests.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, we're gonna be showing you a video, a racist, violent video that got a student ejected from school, but it sure took a while. We'll show you that after this.
Howdy, I'm Parker Mutt, and I hate black people. They're the worst. They're stinky, and they just suck. They're just bad people. If you notice over there is a box of Jordans, the favorite pair of shoes for a black man. I'm gonna show you what I think of a black man. All
so even with the bleeping, I think you get the basic idea of what that video was about. It was posted willingly by that student who recorded it and then posted it because he wanted people to know what he thought of people who weren't quite like him in this country. And what's interesting about that is that it's racist. It's also incredibly violent. It's exactly the sort of thing that you'd imagine we would find out about after that kid went through a high school or a college shooting as many people as possible, and we'd wish that we would have known. So that video was released, and eventually the student was actually kicked out of their school, but the lag was significant. So as a student at Cardinal Newman High School in Columbia, South Carolina, eventually in late July was allowed to withdraw before being expelled. But the videos were actually found in early May. So months went by, months, where the kid was allowed to continue going to that school, even though we know that he had weapons, he despised black people, and could have at any time gone and shot as many people as he wanted. JR?
Okay, when I first saw this, it's one of those things where we go with who's the next shooter gonna be? And there's countless kids like this, by the way. This isn't a one-off look at our society. There's lots of folks like this, and they get stoked. It's people like that are born like this. I mean, that grow up like this because their parents teach them this stuff, which I think also happened. So when you have people who are being groomed to be this way, then you have someone in office, multiple people in office, by the way, that helps stoke this kind of agitation and think they can get away with it because they feel the rest of the country feels the way they do, openly. Things like this happen. Now, Trump was talking about the things we need to do to stop mass shootings and hate. First of yesterday when he said hate speech, or white supremacy is a problem and we got to stop all this. And he didn't really mean it. He went into mental illness. Mm. He went into, we have to do background checks.
Video games.
And video games. So which part of video games forced him? I know there's that video game where they call people the N-word all the time and they shoot at black boxes of Nikes and simulate black people. There's that mental illness where you shoot at black boxes of Jordans and say it's a black person because that's the mental illness. Oh, and background checks would keep this guy in the middle of the woods in South Carolina, wherever he is, from getting that gun that he took out of his dad's drawer.
Arsenal.
Or it's probably in his own drawer because his father gave it to him. Anyway, it goes, these things don't stop the breeding of hatred and bigotry and racism in the country. Yeah. None of that is gonna stop it, but this will continue to happen.
Yeah, and so this is a demonstration of what we talked about, I think on Monday. It was Parker Malloy had a great tweet to this effect, and she was talking specifically about mental illness, but whatever you wanna call what you saw in that video there, that was not a perfectly functioning person. So the question is, what do you do then? And I'm asking the right wing who say, this is not about guns, this is about finding the wrong people and stopping them from doing it. Okay, so that kid, do you take his guns? And if not, please explain why you think a guy who says, this is what I do to black people, I shoot at them, why he should continue to have his guns. Is it about hunting? Is it about self-defense? All that BS that they love to talk about is the reason that people need to have a whole bunch of guns. Is that why he has it, or is it because he could snap at any minute and start shooting people? Yep. And he wants to be ready eventually, if that happens.
Eventually he gets tired of shooting at boxes in the middle of the woods. That gets boring. Everyone knows that. If you're shooting at targets all the time, eventually that gets boring. You want to see something moving. That's probably why part of the thrill of hunting, it's something that's moving, it's trying to avoid you. So eventually that all gets boring, and this guy has a target audience that he wants to come after. Again, the bad people that Trump talks about, ask him, is he one of them? Is Parker one of them?
Exactly. And the idea that they left this kid in that school for 3 months, they were lucky that nothing happened, especially when we find out that police have a number of other videos that he created. We're gonna show you one more to get an idea that this wasn't just one video. I mean, it would be literally the worst thing anyone had done to make even one, but it was a pattern of things he was doing.
Hey, it's me again, Parker Mushin, hater of all black men. Look over here, it seems that our hasn't quite learned his lesson yet. Seems like he needs 25 rounds to the dome. I don't think that was enough. Thank you very much for watching my PSA.
And now just imagine him in a crowd, acting out the fantasy that he so wants to act out. Yep. But again, white supremacy is a hoax, that message brought to you by Tucker Carlson. And look, not that it matters, any student doing this should be a concern because that's a future school shooter right there. But he's connected to important people. He's the grandson of disgraced Republican political kingmaker Richard Quinn, who is himself now facing decades in prison as part of a years-long corruption investigation of GOP state lawmakers. He was also, by the way, a political strategist who worked with Henry McMaster, Lindsey Graham, Strom Thurmond, and John McCain, as well as Ronald Reagan. In fact, he worked with Lindsey Graham as of just 3 years ago. Maybe he doesn't share any of the views of his deranged son, but maybe his son learned them somewhere. Maybe he learned them at home.
Maybe while your kid's out shooting at boxes and stuff in the middle of the woods, you don't know where he is. Or maybe you do know where he is. Maybe he comes home and talks about it and you're like, oh, boys will be boys. Whatever the excuses you have for not knowing or knowing about what your kid is doing is not enough. There's no excuse for this. And just a friendly reminder again, because I feel like this kind of went away. Yes, your former president, Ronald Reagan, was a avowed racist.
Oh, yeah.
And so that happened, and some people, I think his daughter, granddaughter cried over it and said, I can't believe what happened. Oh, well, yeah. you didn't pay much attention to your grandfather.
Yeah.
Either way it goes. Just for a friendly reminder.
Yeah.
In case we forgot.
Yeah. Although I also heard yesterday John Voight said that we cured racism a long time ago. And if anyone would know, I think John Voight would know.
And he's in Hollywood.
He is. Sort of. Okay, so I want to turn from this to a slightly more positive take. So AOC has been trying to, I guess, bring some of these people back. So let's turn to that now. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez sees what's going on in this country when it comes to white supremacy and the radicalization of a certain sort of person in this country. And she wants to bring those people back, if possible. And so she had a message for those people.
What I have to say to the young men and increasingly some of the young women in this country that are falling into the grips of white supremacy, that find themselves getting radicalized in a funnel of vitriol towards Latinos, towards immigrants, towards African Americans, towards all people black, towards all people Jewish, towards all people of different faiths, what I have to say to you is come back. Because there is a mother waiting for you. I know it. I know there's a teacher waiting for you saying, what happened to my kid?
So I love her message, as I nearly always do, but I wonder to what extent, like some, I know that kids are rebellious or whatever. Like if you in your late teens identify as a white supremacist, I hope that you can be brought back, but I don't know if I believe it.
Yeah, it's I like the effort. I mean, why not? Maybe you'll get reach a few. So it's not to downgrade or bash a positive message. It's cool, give it a try, but still keep your head on a swivel because don't believe it until it's proven, you know. Mm-hmm. And whatever, you know, yeah, I'm sure some parents would be like, "What happened to my kid? Oh my God, we've heard it every time. I never would have believed he would do something like this."
Yeah.
And it's fine to believe, but ask a few questions. Yeah. Check it out first, because the reason why we never believe they do these things is because we assume looking at them, they're harmless. It's part of the persona that's put on kids from birth.
Yeah.
Again, from elementary school kids, minorities get treated differently because they're perceived to be more of a threat and a danger to general society. And the ones who aren't fly under the radar and go, I can do whatever I want. We've got one of them in the White House. That's why he's gotten this far.
And look, I want to tie this and part of her message we're going to show you in just a second to the video we showed you of the white student who got a gun and thought that made him like a big tough guy or whatever because he hates black men. I would say probably is terrified of them. So she has a message for people who think that you can just pick up a gun and that can stand in for masculinity.
You're not more of a man with a gun. You're not more of a man if you are capable of violence. You are not stronger if you tear another life down. We have to make sure we address that in our culture. Fixing this is about fixing the laws, but it's about addressing our culture. We're gonna have to go deep.
So I could not agree more. And the issue is that for a certain sort of person growing up on the internet right now, for whatever reason, they wanna feel like a victim or whatever, their role models tell them effectively, not in those many words necessarily, but tell them, yeah, get that gun. You will be a man. That's what you need. You should be incredibly suspicious of women. You should grow to hate women because they're not giving you what you feel you're entitled to. They breed this weak, pathetic, violent, emotional creature, mm-hmm. like you saw in the video earlier in the show.
Yeah, and then the thing is, you need the voices of the people that they actually look up to and relate to say these things.
Yeah.
You know, so when they see AOC say that, it's a positive message and it's true. But when they see her say it or they feel a woman saying it, especially a minority woman saying it, it hits at their guts because they have been conditioned to not care about what that person says.
Yeah.
As many conservatives said about whenever there's Muslim extremism, oh, hey, Muslims, when are you going to fix your community? Go tell them to stop it. Same thing here. Hey, older white men who have sons that do stuff like this, go talk to your kids and tell them to stop it. Because apparently that's the only way things work. If that's your approach, if you think that's what works, you do it yourself too. You have to recognize the problem and call it out and stop it.
Yeah.
Because they're not listening to anyone else.
Yeah, and by the way, to those, again, those people probably aren't watching, but if you're one of these people and you have one of these role models, you might think that these people are opening my eyes. They're giving me the right pill, they're, you know, taking the blinders off, and they're revealing what I need to know to be a fully functioning person. That's not what they're doing. It's not in their financial interest for you to be a happy person who doesn't need their sort of bred resentment. Yeah. They want you to be exactly as pathetic as you need to be to continue to absorb their stuff. Whether it's Ben Shapiro or Jordan Peterson or Dave Rubin or any of them, they want to keep you in a pathetic, low state where you hate the right people and you want to be told by them on a daily basis exactly who has turned you into the creature you are. That's all it is. Buying a gun is not going to fix that. You got to turn the channel, stop listening to them. Okay, we are going to take a short break. We come back, an awesome candidate is in studio to break down a challenge to a Democrat here in California. We'll show that to you after this. The fight to remake the Democratic caucus continues, this time with a primary challenger to the incumbent Democratic Representative Susan Davis for Congressional District 53 of California. We're joined in studio with contender Jose Caballero. Welcome to the studio.
Yes, thank you for
great
having
you
me. Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting to be here to kind of let everybody know about what is happening down in San Diego County. We have a very dynamic race, and reason I'm running is because Susan Davis, because I'm a progressive, right? And progress is in the name, because Susan Davis has been she's had inaction in signing on to Medicare for All, education for all, student loan debt forgiveness, and she has failed to bring the troops home. She's been in for 20 years and has been a member of the Armed Forces Committee, and her biggest donors are defense contractors. Mm-hmm. So as a progressive veteran for peace, I can't stand for this, and that's why we're going to be passing the Hero's Promise once we get in.
So the interesting thing is, I have heard one of the stereotypes is that California is a pretty liberal state, but that there are areas that are incredibly conservative. And you know, down in San Diego, it's known for being a little bit more conservative, but she has been the incumbent for a long time.
Yes.
She wins decisively. So
yes,
this is not some sort, like, I know that there will be pushback from the establishment saying we can't have these primary challenges,
right,
we can lose seats. This is a pretty safe Democratic seat.
Yes, it is. It's a 19 plus district. So that means every time she runs, she wins by 19%. The Republican to get into the primary, or get into the general last time, only got 20,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a leadership district, and we need to be pushing and swinging to the fences, because if we have a strong progressive seat like this and we turn it, we have the possibility of being as progressive as we need to and be leading. And San Diego County District 53 is actually the largest donor base for like candidates like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Yeah, so it's a very central San Diego is very liberal.
So there's my parents live in San Diego, and I'm not sure if a lot of people outside of California know it. It's a military town,
yes,
straight up. So when it comes to the kinds of things that she's put in place as far as representing and also supporting the military, what is the feel from the town about what she's done? Is it just looked over because she's just a name that's there and it seems like she must be doing okay? Or do people actually notice what's happening?
So now that there's a legitimate challenger, myself, running, people are now starting to dig into her record. Mm-hmm. In the past, there hasn't been a lot of really strong challengers that have challenged her. So now that we're in the race, people are starting to examine that record and they start seeing, well, she's only passed two bills that got signed into law, that she's just kind of just sat in office and not really done very much. And as a military town, people are very upset with her on the amount of money that she receives from the defense contractors and things of the like. And the fact that she's on the Armed Forces Committee and not a veteran is a problem.
So why don't we talk about that topic, Ari? You mentioned that this is an opportunity for a leadership position and you want to be a leader on a particular area. So
yes,
if we could bring up, I want to show people your Hero's Promise, Military and Veteran Bill of Rights. Talk to me about putting together this Bill of Rights and why was it important to include these particular components?
Okay, so I served 6 years in the Navy as a reactor operator. And when you serve, you kind of go through what you call the meat grinder. People are It's expected. It's like, oh, you go down to be torn down, to be brought up in your best image. And what the problem is they'll put you through this entire system and then they kick you out. You're done. Like they don't take the time to build you back up as a civilian. And this is a very, very critical issue because we're losing 20 veterans a day to suicide. And San Diego County, being one of the largest veteran populations, is actually one on average. And we have the highest population of homeless vets as well. So San Diego's leading in the wrong areas right now when it comes to veteran issues. And that's why I put my pen to the paper and actually wrote the Hero's Promise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things such as simple as basic meal and sleep protection. I can't tell you how many times I was woken up as a form of punishment to go take out the trash after a long, you know, watch. And not missing meals. Filing a grievance outside of your chain of command to be able to turn in your boss. Mental health service protection. So, for example, it takes 3.5 years to qualify as a reactor operator, 2 years in school and 1 year, 1.5 years on the ship. If you get antidepressants and you become depressed, you lose that job. And the Navy will reassign you and you lose your entire career and all that work that you put into it. We need to protect our veterans from that and our active duty, actually. And we need to give them an end-of-service pension. So give people a chance to get back into the economy. So if you do 4 years, you get 4 years of actually base pay. If you're a combat vet, it's plus two. So it caps at 6 and 8 for combat vets. On the veteran side, we need to make sure that we give them housing rights so we can give them start getting the homeless off the street. We need to get them education so we can have education for the entire lifespan, tuition free. Making sure that we have health care. Doesn't matter if it's dental, hearing, eyesight. Like, these are the things that we need to cover regardless of your service connected. And lastly, we need to make sure that they have a citizenship as a right. And that's very, very critical as well. And if to have the Hero's Promise, to be able to effectively do it and be qualified for it, you have to do a therapy session a month for the entire duration of this end-of-service pension. So you have to go and see somebody and talk about what happened in the military.
So that sounds like actually supporting our troops, as opposed to just saying it over and over and sending them abroad again. So I imagine that will be, especially in that district, a very popular proposal.
Oh, it's very popular. In fact, we have candidates across the country that are using it, like Brianna Wu in Michigan 7th, and running against Stephen Lynch. She's actually using it because she's talking to veterans and she's like, look at the Hero's Promise. And people are like, wow, this is speaking to the heart, because every veteran knows these issues deep down inside. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of people across the country are doing this.
Real fast, can you tell us, because this struck me, and since I wasn't in the military and I also never suffered from any mental health issues, which a lot of times obviously were brought on from experiences that many of these folks had. How does it strike you as a veteran, the way, and you've known folks that had to deal with this, the way the president approaches these mass shootings and points out mental health, as if, and by the way, connecting and calling the folks that deal with mental health monsters, he said it 3 times in one particular 5-minute speech. Does that land on folks that actually have to deal with it, or do they just kind of think, oh, well, he's talking about someone else?
Well, a lot of times they think it's someone else, right? And you know, when you talk about these mental health issues, you know, as a veteran in the military, you're trained to be strong. And that's rewarded. If you're weak, you're punished. Mm-hmm. So you come out with that trauma of survival. So a lot of them is like, oh, that's not me. That's not me. So there's a lot of that is happening. Right. So that's why having the mental health protections and making sure that they're seeing a therapist every month is so critical. Because if you're talking to a professional will be able to pinpoint where the trauma is. Because everybody in the military has trauma. Yeah. Everybody. Because the second you step off that bus, you have somebody yelling at you in the face and calling you terrible
intentional
things.
Trauma.
Exactly, right? And so the next day you wake up, guess what? It's now post-trauma. Yeah. So that's where we have to have these services. And if we're going to all agree that the military is a tough environment, then we need to make sure that our heroes have a promise, a safe journey home, that we give them something that actually thanks them for their service.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that sounds like an awesome plan.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Think it's probably going to play very well in the district and outside. It's been great getting a chance to get to know you a little bit
absolutely.
Better. Hopefully, we can talk a little bit more during the election. I have to imagine that there will probably be some pushback against you for challenging an incumbent.
Absolutely.
We can break that down as well.
Absolutely.
Before we say goodbye, do you have a website?
Yes, I do. So it's joseforcongress.us and slash the Hero's Promise if you want to learn more. But donate to our campaign. Our campaign is an actual policy that will save veteran lives. And if we're losing over 139,000 veterans have passed away since 9/11, this is an epidemic. So if you believe in the Hero's Promise, donate to our campaign. Veterans across the country are donating. Their family members are donating across the country, because we need to stop draping flags over coffins. We need a policy that's wrapped in one.
Jose, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
We're gonna take one last break. We come back, Tucker Carlson's incredibly controversial comments calling white supremacy just a hoax and a conspiracy theory. We'll respond after this. Just days ago, a white supremacist killed 22 people in El Paso, and so the country is finally having a conversation about this threat. But not everyone is buying it, including Tucker Carlson.
But the whole thing is a lie. If you were to assemble a list, a hierarchy of concerns or problems this country faces, where would white supremacy be on the list? Right up there with Russia, probably. It's actually not a real problem in America. The combined membership of every white supremacist organization in this country, were they able to fit inside a college football stadium? I mean, seriously. This is a country where the average person is getting poorer, where the suicide rate is spiking. White supremacy, that's the problem. This is a hoax. Just like the Russia hoax, it's a conspiracy theory used to divide the country and keep a hold on power. That's exactly what's going on.
Okay, so that sentient thumb thinks that white supremacy is just a conspiracy theory, literally hours, well, like what, 80 hours away from the terror attack that killed 22 people from a guy who said that he wanted to kill as many Mexicans as possible. But that's his job. No, that's who he is.
Yeah.
That segment, that 40 seconds, was all you need to watch of him for the full year, and you've seen it all.
Yeah. The problem I was approaching there and trying to confront this was trying to make sense of what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And none of it makes any sense, so you just left with the face of.
Which is the face he starts with, actually.
You're trying to figure out what's going on. So the point, again, made when first, just talk about simple racists outside of white supremacists, right? Mm. Simple racists, and then when we have to prove to someone that they're a racist by saying, hey, did they say the N-word? Did they write it down? Did they put it on a manifesto? That's the only way we're going to accept that they're a racist in the first place. So he says there has to be a membership of people in white supremacist organizations in order for us to consider a white supremacy a problem. For some reason, when black folks were talking about, hey, don't shoot us, or Black Lives Matter, people just generally said, police are over-policing and violent towards certain members of society. When that happens, suddenly everybody's in that group. Mm-hmm. There was no downplaying of that and saying that, hey, people are just, they're just out there in the streets because there's a problem.
Yeah.
But when it comes to white supremacy, you have to sign up, pay a monthly due or something in order to be considered a white supremacist. And lastly, he said they're just doing this to hold on to power. Who's in power again? Holding on to what power?
Exactly. He also said, by the way, white supremacy isn't a threat. You couldn't even fill up a stadium with white supremacists. First of all, you definitely could. They're just not dues paying members. But I got news for you. Do you think there's 75,000 radical Muslim terrorists in the country? I don't think so. So it sounds like Tucker Carlson says that radical Islam is not a major threat. So I'm glad to see him move over to our side on that. Not only was there attack of the week of this last weekend, the FBI director says that domestic terrorists coming from far right white supremacists is a gigantic threat. We know that they're killing the most people in terror attacks. We know all of that. But the most important thing that we know is that is it irrelevant whether a person thinks that white supremacy doesn't exist when they are themselves a white supremacist. And there are few people with an audience as large who are as devoted to this ideology as Tucker Carlson. The same guy, and we could go through hours of this, the same guy who said that Ilhan Omar's presence in government is living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. Simply because she isn't white, she's a living fire alarm. He's also the guy who not too long ago said that Iraqis are semi-literate primitive monkeys. So he doesn't believe that racism is a problem.
Sounds like Reagan.
He said that immigrants make the US dirtier, which sounds like not even sophisticated white supremacists. That sounds like just some moron who's had a couple too many beers. But he's also the guy, oddly enough, who's been endorsed by David Duke, who tweeted, "Can't cuck the tuck." Which, if you want to endorse me, don't put it that way, please. But he loves Tucker Carlson. Richard Spencer, actual Nazi, said Tucker has become a major public figure, not simply for his talents and good humor, but because he has raised the specter of nationalism, national disintegration, and anti-white hatred, often implicitly and increasingly explicitly. And that is the only place where I agree with Richard Spencer in his perception of what Tucker Carlson is there to do.
As Andrew Gillum said, you know, I'm not saying he's a racist. Racists are saying he's a racist.
Yes. All hoax, all conspiracy theory. Those words have a little bit less meaning after today, thanks to Tucker Carlson. Anyway, as always, Jared, thank you so much for joining us
good
on Wednesday. It's great to have you
it
here.
Goes by
and filling
too fast.
Last week, 100%. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.